Please welcome to the stage, host of Sportcast, Scott Soshday, and Evan Navi Williams, and special guest, Chris Helmonte, the athletic director at the University of Texas at Austin.
Hello, I'm Scott Soshnick.
And I'm Evan Novi Williams, and this is the Bevo, Big Bertha, and Burnt Orange sports business podcast, The Sportacast.
Now, Chris, if you listen to the show, and you better listen to the show, you know that I like the guest to rate Evan's opening there. So I thought he brought good enthusiasm. I thought it was a little bit on the generic side, like I could have predicted some of those UT references. Your thoughts on the open?
Thought it was perfect.
No,
reference. Come on now, that was fantastic. No.
All right, well, I was gonna let this go, but since you took his side, I'm gonna start you off with like some things we're hearing in the world. Now, I've got some good sources around these parts. Some of them are telling me that you will not appear in the EA game because you want to focus on athletic administration. That cannot possibly be true.
I had no idea they had an EA game for athletic administration. That would be hilarious.
Didn't sound
a bunch
waiver,
of guys in suits. Hi, how are you? Nice to see you. Welcome.
But we would play that game, I
yeah,
think.
Yeah, we would play that thing. Game. Yeah. But it's a good place to start because the job now is nothing like the job 3 years ago, 5 years ago, 7 years ago. Where are we in this life cycle of what it means to be an athletic director?
Just got to adapt with change. It's actually an exciting time. It's a really exciting time for everybody. But it's one of those things that if you don't adapt with the times, then you'll die. You know, it's just evolution. And I think
is it evolution or are we in college sports? Is it revolution right now?
Combination. Okay. You know what I mean? I think you could have said the same thing with the advent of television. The advent of internet when it hit the market. Everyone's evolving, and I think that it's just part of the landscape we're in today.
I heard from athletic directors 10 years ago that when that round of conference realignment happened, the next 2 years were the most important in college sports history. And then I heard when NIL happened, the next 2 years are the most important in college sports history. Now I hear a lot, the next 2 years are the most important in college sports history. Where do you stand on that? How crazy do you expect the next 24 months to be on the business side?
That's a perfect hyperbole. Every 2 years are the most important years in college athletics. I mean, I think that the ever-changing landscape of college athletics is always changing. You know, and it's just not one of the industries that's never static or it's not stagnant. And I will tell you that the next 2 years are important. But I think what we're dealing with now is just unprecedented. You know, a lot of times we've been in an industry that's operated under a 110 theory, right? We had one governing body. You have 30 states right now with different state laws. It's like it's this race to make sure they don't get left behind. And the reality is, if we just let the dust settle a little bit, it's an exciting time and we can all adapt together.
How comfortable do you feel? I imagine you feel pretty comfortable moving to the SEC, one of, if you look at revenue and expenses, one of the richest athletic departments in the country. I assume you feel pretty comfortable right now with where the Longhorns are financially.
I'm excited about the opportunity. I don't think finances has ever really been a worry for us in that regard. I think the idea of us going to the Southeastern Conference is the competition. Our student athletes want to play against the very best. They're excited about that, but you know, it's part of the, at one time we were in the Southern Intercollegiate Athletics Conference at the turn of the century. So we're just coming home. That's the way I look at it.
Years ago, I called Bobby Bowden one day, you know, former coach at Florida State. And he said, you know, I think the world is changing on me and I'm not long for this. The president of the school came to my office just so he could note that there were some empty seats. He's like, I'd never seen the president. Like, do we have edifice complex, the need to generate revenue, the pressures on the athletic department are very real. How's the relationship between the university side and the athletic department?
I think that's what makes where we're at right now in this moment in time really special. I think when you have an institution aligned from your board chair to your president to the athletic director to the administration, we're all rowing the same boat in the same direction. That's what makes it really, really a special time at Texas. And you can see when it's not that way, things get off kilter. And I've seen institutions along the way that get off kilter because they weren't aligned. And I think that's what makes it special right now is we're truly aligned in every move we make.
What's the North Star for Texas athletics as well as the university?
There's a saying in the weight room, the winning traditions of the University of Texas are not entrusted to the timid nor the weak. We want to win in everything we do, and that's the goal of our athletic program. I think the North Star for us is this year is to finish the Big 12 in the right fashion and honor our commitment to the Big 12, but we're super excited about the Southeastern Conference. And our goal is to win a championship of every sport. I think we've won 15 national championships in the last 3 years. We've been the Director's Cup for the best athletic program in the country, and that's the standard that we live with every single day, and that's what we strive for every day.
The football team got close this year, the first CFP appearance for Texas. From a business standpoint, going through that for the first time, any takeaways? What did you learn? What surprised you about going into the playoff and what it means for Texas financially?
Well, there was not. It was not really a financial gain. It was the idea that it was just an exciting opportunity to know that if you win that game, you're playing for a national championship. We were in the Sugar Bowl. We were in that Sugar Bowl a couple years earlier. It's just the CFP heightened awareness. We know from a renewal standpoint the excitement of Texas athletics. But it was. I wouldn't say there's this. Oh, windfall, you went there. That's not how it works.
Chris just said the R word, renewals. I know you're close, right? It's a few days away for football.
For
how
sure.
Are you doing in a very important metric for athletic departments?
Mucho bueno. But the idea, the big excitement is we're going to play who we play next year. We got Georgia. We have Florida, Mississippi State, Kentucky at home. We get our old rivalry at A&M, Arkansas. It's an exciting time. I think our fan base is just super pumped to have those brands in DKR Memorial Stadium for us to rekindle old rivalries. For a lot of our old fans, Arkansas was a big rival for us. I mean, Daryl Royal and Frank Burrows retired on the same day in DKR in 1976 when they played their last game together.
If I said Earl Campbell, I'm not sure he'd know who I'm talking about.
We have a running joke that I don't know anything about sports that happened before 1995. So Earl Campbell is a name that I know.
Okay. You know Earl clear. Campbell? Yeah. I mean, I'm glad. At least you're in Austin, Texas.
That's a name I know.
Brush
I
up on that
I
a little
promise.
Bit.
I yeah. do feel better. Your off-season to-do list ranges from scoreboard to lounges to stadium. You know, this, to me, sounds like a professional endeavor. And that's the big debate. How professionalized has big-time college sports become, particularly football?
Well, you know, it's interesting. It's professional sports, when they sneeze, we catch a cold, right? You think of all these new stadiums, all the experience they provide. We're asking people to give up their discretionary income to come watch a game. And it used to be just you just come sit in the stands and watch a game and enjoy that corny dog. We spent Drew Martin, who I have the pleasure of working with, we spent a lot of time with Disney. We spent a lot of time with Ritz-Carlton watching all the things they do to create incredible customer service. And you think about Disney.
Is that Disney Institute of Customer Service?
Right, yeah. And you go through not only customer service, but the entire day when they get to the hotel, when they get to the park, the entire experience, and they charge a crazy number. Well,
there's an entire business around game day experience now.
So that's part of, for us, is trying to create an incredible game day that there's value, because we know we all want to win the game, but we're asking them to spend their discretionary income with us, and we want to create an incredible value around the entire game. If a game starts at 7 o'clock, I'm at the stadium at 6 a.m., we walk the entire stadium. Are the restrooms clean? Is the entire stadium look great? Are we ready for game day? Beavis Boulevard, the Midway concert series. We do all these things around the game to create this incredible game day environment, because we want that customer to come back as a repeat customer.
Yeah,
we had the Georgia AD on last year, and he was talking about the smell in the football stadium.
They pump in a smell.
That was something they tested and made sure they had the right smell that really invoked Georgia athletic tradition, whatever that
just
means.
Barbecue. You got big fans just throwing barbecue out there. Okay,
That would work for you too.
I do not suggest Bevo scent. That's all I'll say.
Exactly.
I do not suggest that.
Big barbecue fans. Something new. I'll put big barbecue fans. Just a little, instead of having like the car scent, we'll just put barbecue scent all over the place.
Do you remember, Evan, one of the things he said also was fans were complaining about the ice. They didn't like the texture of the ice. So they went with a local supplier, and they changed
Zaxby's
it.
Ice is their thing. Yeah.
I don't know what the difference is, but apparently they liked it. What do your fans tell you that they do not like. You must do fan surveys. In the pros, it's ingress, egress, things like what do fans want improved?
I mean, always parking.
Yeah.
Always parking traffic after games, post game. You know, you have 100,000 people, you're dumping them right onto the city streets of Austin. Some days it'll take you an hour to get out. That's a drag.
So how are you fixing it?
Well, we constantly work with the city. We constantly work with our partners saying, what do we do? The difference with us is a lot of schools in the Southeastern Conference aren't set up in the metropolitan area like Austin. We know that there's 1.5 million people within our city. We feel like it's great to have a closed market, but we just constantly work with our city partners to improve traffic. The one thing, if you've been to our stadium, we have no surface lots. So we're surrounded by parking garages. There's really not much you can do with parking garages except just talk about patience, talk about how we can go about it, but it is what it is.
Yeah, the New England Patriots came up with a great solution to that very same problem. They pay fans to stay for up to 1 hour after the game. You cannot leave, but they'll pay you to stay. And, of course, the Crafts own a lot of the ancillary businesses around the stadium, so what do the fans do with that money? They go to the restaurant and the bar, and they spend it there. It's actually a really creative idea by the Crafts.
I understand the concept. You get one drink for free, and you buy the next three. We don't have that, but good on Kraft. I get it.
I've kind of always wondered why tailgating is obviously such a huge part of the culture of football, but college football especially. Once the game's over, it's like the whole party's over. Right? In most places that I've gone to, and I've been to a few UT games as well, if there was a way to build the before and after to be similar, I feel like you would solve a lot of these issues.
Well, majority of the NFL games are in the day, too. A lot of our games are 7 o'clock, 8 o'clock tip. It's just a little bit different. If you look at NFL windows, a lot of those are day games. They may have a night game, but not a majority. Majority of our games are at night. And you think about it, we opened up Bevo's Boulevard, which is an amazing, and we brought the entire State Fair Midway down. We got merry-go-rounds. We got all kinds of stuff cooking. We have zip lines. Then you have this entire Bevo's Boulevard, plus a concert. So we had Salt and Pepper. We have all these groups that come in every game and just create this great environment, but they're late game. But if they get there at 10 a.m. and the game gets out at 10, they're going home.
Give me one Salt and Pepper song, Chris.
I have no idea. I just know they showed up, and I was like, who are they? I mean, it's not my genre. But the young people liked them. And then post-game, these knuckleheads went to Coachella, whatever it's called, the music festival.
Coachella.
And they came out with Silent Disco. And it was unbelievable. 3,000 students just jumping around with nothing.
Without a sound, I'm like, yeah.
How bombed are they? It was
Sounds like Cameron Indoor Stadium to me.
It was nuts.
Chris, would you agree that athletics in college right now, it seems, it has all the recipe for being ripe for disruption? Like you have different stakeholders, you have haves, you have nots, you have change, you have rapid change. You're asking for patience. Can't we all figure it out? They'll say, yeah, you can do it. You're in the SEC. You've got all the money. Do you expect there to be some sort of disruptor stepping in, and usually comes with capital, but some sort of disruptor to step into college athletics and say, we can do it better?
Hard to say, but I'll say this. It's one of the things that's unlike any other industry in the country, we've always been under the 110 theory. I remember when they had came up with media guides. It could only be 200 pages and only 4 colors. Well, Texas could have did 200 pages of color. Cal Poly San Luis Obispo could only afford 2 pages, right? I remember these crazy rules that we put in place to try to create some semblance of competitive balance within the industry. We also have unlimited scholarships. We put caps on scholarships in terms of you're only allowed 85. When Coach Royal coached here, he had 150 on the freshman team on scholarship. So the advent of those things have been phenomenal because you had Title IX came in, opportunity for women to participate. It is so awesome. We just celebrated 50 years. And you can see the women's athletic program is just booming. You can smell that, too. Whatever they're smoking around here is off the chain here.
There's your
crazy.
Not barbecue.
That was not barbecue, I can assure you that. Whatever they're blowing over here is nuts. But the idea of creating disruption, it's always been in our industry, but we've always had a governing body. The difference now is you have 30 states with different rules and regulations, And that's the disruptor.
Yeah, but do you really want Congress to come in and say, we'll solve it for you? You really think that's an answer?
I don't think it's Congress, but I think every state's worried about being left out.
Every school's worried about... I remember the handshake between the Pac-12 and the ACC. That lasted about 3 minutes.
I understand that concept, but I think... We need to have some type of regulation. I'm not saying whatever Congress or whatever it is, we need some regulation to say, guys, it's not a race to the bottom for access. No one's going to get left out. Name, image, likeness is here. We're going to embrace that. But what you can't have is one rule in Texas, different in Missouri, different in California, different in Washington, different in Ohio. That's the disruptor. What we do is educate young people. We give them an unbelievable opportunity to show their wares in competition. The industry, I have two revenue sports that make money for everybody, football and men's basketball, and my P&L. That supports our entire athletic program. So I think this disruption is here, but it's just a little bit more chaotic when you have each state on a different trajectory.
One of the disruptions that I hear talked about a lot is the idea of football breaking away, becoming something that is more detached from university athletic departments in a way that it's not right now. Is that likely, in your opinion? Unlikely? Are you preparing for that eventuality? Where do you view the idea of football being better as something that is somewhat separate from the rest of all the sports you offer?
I hope not. Only 2% of my kids go pro. The rest of them become lawyers, doctors. They become podcast hosts. They become businessmen. They become great individuals in our society. The reality is what's getting lost is that they're just students. They're 18 to 22-year-old kids. And I get the idea of why, but that economics of whether it be television, season ticket sales, concession sales, that all that money generated supports all 18 of our sports. We're completely self-sufficient at the University of Texas in every form or fashion. We contribute a significant amount back to the institution. But without that economics, how are you going to run your 20 sports? How are you going to have an Olympic movement? How are you going to have an athletic program? So there's all these things being thrown out there, but you also got to look at what does that do for the totality of your entire athletic program?
One of the things that I would argue is a more concentrated collection of the most valuable brands in college sports probably is better commercial value for all of those schools, right? So in a hypothetical situation where Texas is a part of that and there's more money spinning off there, there is maybe enough money to both fund the things that you're talking about. And if by legislation or by unionization or whatever it is, there needs to be money for athletes, there's potentially money there. It feels like that is a potential solution, is that creating a more concentrated value chain that therefore makes more money for you guys.
Yeah, you know, I mean, you can go with the Premier League concept. I get it, right? But, you know, it's interesting. What's special about college athletics, too, is the David and Goliath, the NCAA basketball tournament, what's happening. You know, these things... TCU making it to the championship 2 years. That's the fiber of us as well. So you're just trying to balance everything going forward. And I'm not naive to think that more and more disruption is coming. What you have to do is make sure that you take care of your student athletes the very best possible way, give them all the opportunities. I know at the University of Texas, we will be prepared for any change that comes.
We've written a lot about Florida State and its conversations with private equity about maybe bringing in some private capital. I know there's a lot of other conversations happening across sports at the college and at the conference level. What is your expectation about private equity in college? Do you think it is an eventuality? Is it a maybe? What are your thoughts there?
I don't know enough about it, but I do know enough when private equity gets in, they're not giving you money for the heck of it. They're going to get something out of it. It's usually 10, 15, 20%. That 10, 15, 20% is critical to me to support our entire athletic program. So I think the economic models of colleges is no different than in the early 80s when we sued in 1983 for more access for television. No one saw ESPN coming back in 1979. There was a big disruptor. It was used to be your revenue just came from the tickets you sold. So you see social media, you see the internet, all these things are happy to have positive effects that it's just part of that evolution. I just don't, in my mind, don't really grasp how private equity will work when my current state, I know when a private equity company goes and buys another company or does it, they're bound and determined to get paid. Well, that's I'm not trying to pay anybody else. I'm trying to give our student athletes all the money they need.
So fair to say that's not going to happen at UT Athletics anytime soon?
Factual.
All right, Leslie, we'll let you go with this. Dartmouth, one, your reaction, and two, Caitlin Clark and what women's sports might be able to do.
Caitlin Clark. I mean, for us, it's even localized. Our women's volleyball, all of our women's sports are in the top five in the country. And to see what... Show off, for sure.
I hear the volleyball games are
mucho
bonkers.
Bueno. Yeah. But what Caitlin Clark has done is just put an incredible spotlight for her talent. It is awesome to see. I'm excited for the rise of women's basketball and the viewership. I mean, you think about Dawn Staley in South Carolina. They're 29-0 and 29-2 years in a row. I mean, she's done an amazing job. I mean, you look at LSU. We have a great coach in Vic Schaefer in our women's basketball program this year. We have a freshman's player of the year. I mean, these stories are being told about, and partly because of Caitlin's success, it is just a right time.
Which women's sport, from a business standpoint, is the one that you see?
Which will be the first profitable women's sport in your arsenal?
It'll be a toss-up between women's basketball and volleyball.
Volleyball.
Wow.
Yeah. Volleyball is in a smaller venue, but they both have a chance. In the rise of volleyball, you think about ratings for women's basketball, 2.5-3 million. No one would have thought that, right? And it was just for one-off games. Now it's becoming consistent. So I think you're going to see that in a going-forward space. Both of those, on our standpoint, have a chance.
All right, they're telling us to wrap, Evan. So I won't make them answer the Dartmouth question. So,
I can't answer the Dartmouth question. To me, it's a little bit crazy because they're all non-scholarship. I'm like, look at that, going, what are we doing here? It's one of those things that I don't even know their television contract. It's far too me to see what's going on within the Ivy Leagues. Because their makeup is completely different than where I'm at the University of Texas.
So when we close the show, we always give out Twitter handles. I got to warn you, Scott, Chris's Twitter handle has an underscore in it.
Oh, I hate he's got an underscore.
Let me run somebody. I hate it, too.
Oh, so get rid of it. Change it.
I don't even know how to do it.
I thought I was going to win this one.
Whoever the SID that did that, I didn't do that.
Fire that man. Where is it?
Can I get rid of that? It should just be Del Conte, but it has this little deal, and I don't even know if it was. I just saw it. I used to call it a line. Why do I have a line in my deal?
My new favorite guest. And by the way, when he closes, I do my best to distract him. Let's just continue this discussion as you try and close the show.
Special
go ahead.
Thank you to Chris O'Conti, the athletic director.
There's a guy out there who has the name at Eben. He's been trying for years to get it. The guy won't give it up. He never tweets. He's struggling right now.
I am Evan Novi Williams on Twitter at Novi_Williams.
_Williams.
There you go.
Thank you to Aaron.
Eric Little Line. Or Eben Little Line.
Little Line.
At Sportacast, which is the hub of the Sportico Media Network.
Oh.